News Radio KMAN, good morning. It's now 7:03, and as part of our daily effort to keep our community informed as to some of the latest concerns and developments with regard to the COVID-19 virus, we continue today with Ascension Via Christi Hospital President and CEO Bob Koppel, who's going to bring us up to date on some medical aspects. Bob, good morning, and thank you once again.
Morning, Dave.
We have a lot of things here I want to try to get to, and as you know, we have some limited time, but I understand that there's quite a bit of collaboration between the hospital and, you know, especially the physicians that are in the community, a lot of family practice physicians, and what, tell us a little bit about that collaborative effort.
We actually have another organization call this evening, and it's spearheaded actually by a number of our community physicians, both primary care physicians and also a number of our specialists, and really have worked to make sure that we're not only including government agencies, but the hospitals, the other care providers, CONSA, our local FQHC, kind of everybody working together to, one, get on the same page, but also to message the same and to be certain that we're coordinating efforts. For example, like the drive-through testing system that was launched on Monday, that's a collaboration between the health department, CONSA, and then some of our local offices, physician offices.
And that's got to really hopefully kind of speed, increase efficiency and understanding?
Well, we're hoping a couple of things. One, by centralizing the testing, we're actually going to minimize the use of personal protective equipment because that staff would be the only ones that would need to gown up and gear up to do the testing, but also as a way to help better coordinate and track the tests. And I know there's been a lot of questions about, you know, so why does it take so long to get the test results back? And quite honestly, I think across the country, the testing systems have been overwhelmed. And you've got other organizations who are bringing testing capability online. But for the last, you know, several weeks, your options were to send tests to KDHE in Topeka. And our turnaround time there is typically 3 to 4 days. A lot of the, you can also send to private labs, national labs, but those tests are all sent like to North Carolina or somewhere in Arizona, and so their turnaround time has gotten up to 6 or 8 days. So that's why we're seeing now testing coming online in Kansas City, in Tulsa, and some other places like that that will hopefully reduce the time lag back down.
We'd also, Bob, like to remind our residents about that call screening number, and I think that that's an important aspect about the process of doing the drive-through testing, and that's 785-323-6400. And they have to go through that process first, correct me if I'm wrong, before they can go through, before they have to get like a code or something like that before they can, and then they'll be advised where to go for the drive-through.
Right. You'll go like through the phone screening, and then depending upon your symptoms and severity, you actually be then referred on to either a physician office or an urgent care center or, you know, if you're really bad, here to the hospital emergency department. But after you've been seen by a provider and screened, then the decision would be made if you meet the criteria, because there's still criteria of who gets tested. And then if you're, for example, at that physician office, you meet the criteria, then they would send you over to the testing center that's being run here in town. And there's communication back and forth between the practice and the testing site, so they know you're coming. There's times that you have to be there at. You know, there's kind of time slots. And then you roll through, and they'll actually do your swabbing through the window of your car.
It's a fascinating process, and hopefully that will be very efficient. You know, we've been fortunate so far. We have not yet seen community spread here, but, you know, it's still early in the process of COVID and potentially continuing its expansion.
Yeah, you know, I think actually a physician said to me yesterday, he said, I have to believe that every single person I encounter is a potential positive. And so, again, watching for symptoms, asking questions, and also just being careful, again, about, it gets back to those basic personal hygiene things. How often am I washing my hands? What am I touching? What am I not touching? Don't touch my face. Those sorts of things.
You also expressed to me, and I read something about this the other day, that there are some now additional signs of COVID. I saw that people have, you know, like losing their ability to smell and also taste.
Yeah, so that's... I was actually on the phone last evening talking with one of our local physicians about that because, quite honestly, I didn't understand the why, and I still don't understand all the details. But for some people, this actually is like a forebearer of having any other symptoms. And so if you, for example, do like suddenly lose your sense of smell and or taste, and it seems like the sense of smell is more prevalent, that's probably time to actually now reach out to your healthcare provider, because that may be a precursor of having actual fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. And it just has to do with the buildup in your nostrils, if you will. And it's just kind of, to me, I think it's something we're going to have to learn a lot more about pretty quickly. But that would be potentially another heads up that people have got something going on.
We're visiting with Bob Koppel, President and CEO of Essentia Via Christi Hospital. How are plans going with distribution of patients at the hospital? I know that you've got to people that are needing to be quarantined or sequestered or whatever terminology you use.
Well, so in the hospital, we're trying to segregate those we know have COVID, which in our case is one patient, from everybody else, and that's 30-some patients. So that's really not that difficult at this point. Going forward, we would make an effort to keep units or parts of units, kind of these are the positive areas, these are the negative areas, understanding that we're actually taking precautions with everybody, because it goes back to what that physician said. You almost have to assume that everybody is a positive, because you don't really know. If they're in the first several days of having COVID, they're not actually exhibiting any symptoms whatsoever, but they are potentially shedding virus. And so that's why you've just got to be careful with everyone.
What is the capacity of the hospital? I mean, like if we do see some community spread in the next week or two, do you have an idea of what kind of the number of beds that you'll be able to take care of some of these patients?
So actually, it's part of our emergency management planning, and it's not specific to COVID-19. It's just part of the process is you identify areas that you expand capacity into, and also in the case of something that's like a respiratory issue like COVID, you also are looking at ways you take equipment that you have and use it for additional or multiple people at the same time. So, for example, if anybody's reading, like in New York City, a single ventilator may be supporting more than one patient. I've heard, having two people on a ventilator, not uncommon. There's some areas that have even done that with four patients. You can use anesthesia machines. There's all sorts of other options that you have. And it's not to say that your growth potential is infinite, but it really, I think a lot of people get hung up on, do you have 10 beds or do you have 20 beds? And that's really actually not the issue, because we have ability just to expand. The question really, I think for me, it still comes back to what is the population you're actually going to expect? And kind of like we talked yesterday, is that 600 positives in the county or is that 6,000? Because that's what's going to drive the need for the expansion of the alternate care sites within the facility. And that's why it's so important to do that social distancing, because that's what's going to keep us in the community towards the lower end of the spectrum on the number of positive cases.
I know there's always like an emergency test that emergency operations do, like if there was a plane crash out at the airport, something like that, where you've got, dozens and dozens of people that need care. And that sounds like that's kind of an extension of that process.
Yeah, so you practice and we drill actually for all kinds of bad situations. So typically in an area like where we are, we're fairly rural, you drill around things like school bus wrecks or actually significant storm events, because there's a lot of times, for example, like tornadoes, things like that, that tend to cover a wide geographic area, but you have a potential for multiple casualties. And so that's when you look at the mass casualty, so when you look at mass casualty events, that's what we drill around. The difference with COVID is that it's not like a distinct episode. So you have a storm, it kind of goes through, and that's it. With COVID, the difference here is that this is something you're anticipating that's going to go 4, 6, 8 weeks. And so that's really you've got to kind of adjust your plan with that mindset, and that this is not just kind of we've got the rush of patients and we've got it managed. This is going to be kind of a continuing, it may just be a trickle, but you've got this continuing inflow of patients over weeks, and that then is just a different way of looking at the work that we've got to do.
One final question for you, Bob, and this is kind of like maybe an opinion based on a national discussion. Yesterday, President Trump said something about trying to get the economy back up and running and the country back up and running by Easter. Is that attainable?
So I'm a scientist by training. I'm an engineer, and I would say that I'm not sure that there's good science there. I think everybody's aware of the economic impact. I'm on the chamber board here in town. We have an economic development committee meeting actually in 15 minutes. We're doing it by phone. But, you know, we're very conscious of the economic impact of having people stay at home and be in a more of a protective state. But I guess I and at least the folks on the healthcare side of the field, I know our physicians certainly feel this way, is that it's better to perhaps suffer short-term than have a catastrophic event that's going to really have a huge long-term impact. So that's why, we are Ascension Via Christi is the largest non-governmental employer in town. I mean, we're very aware of the economic impact that we personally have and that the rest of the businesses have. But this really is a time I think we've got to sit and kind of wait this out and really, they use that term, flatten the curve. That is where we save lives. That is where we do the best job we can for taking care of people in our country.
Bob Koppel, thanks for joining us this morning here at News Radio KMAN. We certainly appreciate the update and all the work that you and your staff and the entire medical community are doing to keep our community safe. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Dave.
Appreciate it very much. 7:14 at News Radio KMAN. We'll have a look at our forecast, and then Mitch Forder will be stepping in with our morning sports on KMAN.